This is a Flashbooks audio summary on presence, bringing your boldest self to your biggest challenges. Written and published by GetFlashNotes.com, narrated by Dean Bukhari, original book authored by Amy Cuddy. Crucial quotes. Quote, presence, as I mean it throughout these pages, is the state of being attuned to and able to comfortably express our true thoughts, feelings, values, and potential. Quote, focus less on the impression you're making on others and more on the impression you're making on yourself. Overview. In presence, author Amy Cuddy tells us a little bit about what this quality means. That's how she begins the book. Quote, the research I've been doing for years now joins a large body of inquiry into a quality I call presence. Presence stems from believing in and trusting yourself, your real, honest feelings, values, and abilities. That's important because if you don't trust yourself, how can others trust you? Whether we're talking in front of 2,000 people or 5 people interviewing for a job or negotiating for a raise or pitching a business idea to potential investors, speaking up for ourselves or speaking up for someone else, we all face daunting moments that must be met with poise if we want to feel good about ourselves and make progress in our lives. Presence gives us the power to rise to these moments. End quote. Amy Cuddy is best known for having delivered the second most viewed TED Talk in history. The talk is titled, Your Body Shapes Who You Are, and it's definitely worth watching if you haven't already done so. Cuddy wrote this book, Presence, to help people of all walks of life develop a strong sense of presence, that quality that helps us command respect and inspire others, speak with poise and clarity, become genuinely likable to others, develop an inner sense of confidence that helps us feel good about ourselves and make progress in our lives. We'll talk more about how presence helps us lean into the aforementioned qualities, along with much, much more in the big ideas we'll be sharing in this book summary. So, are you ready to dive into the first big idea? Let's do it. Big idea number one. What is presence? Quote, presence, as I mean it throughout these pages, is the state of being attuned to and able to comfortably express our true thoughts, feelings, values, and potential. End quote. Here's the thing about presence. It comes and it goes. It's a moment-to-moment type of experience that is not permanent in nature. In other words, there's a ton of pieces to the puzzle when it comes to developing presence. So the question is, how does presence emerge? What are the pieces to the puzzle? As Cuddy tells us, quote, presence emerges when we feel personally powerful, which allows us to be acutely attuned to our most sincere selves. In this psychological state, we are able to maintain presence even in the very stressful situations that typically make us feel distracted and powerless. When we feel present, our speech, facial expressions, postures, and movements align. They synchronize and focus. And that internal convergence, that harmony, is palpable and resonant because it's real. It's what makes us compelling. We are no longer fighting ourselves. We are being ourselves. Our search for presence isn't about finding charisma or extroversion or carefully managing the impression we're making on other people. It's about the honest, powerful connection that we create internally with ourselves. End quote. In short, What is presence? Where does it come from? Presence, it comes from within. Our presence emerges when we develop our personal power and begin believing in and trusting ourselves. It emerges when we bring out the most authentic version of who we are, when we quote unquote show up in congruence and in alignment with our truest feelings, values, and abilities. Presence, it's a beautiful thing, isn't it? But it can be difficult to call upon when we need it most. And that is why we must master our ability to become as present as possible, as often as possible, which is what this book summary is dedicated to helping us do. Big idea number two, self-affirmation theory. Quote, "The kind of self-affirmation I'm talking about, the kind whose effects researchers have studied, doesn't have anything to do with reciting generic one-liners in the mirror, nor does it involve boasting or self-aggrandizement. Instead, it's about reminding ourselves what matters most to us, and by extension, who we are. In effect, it's a way of grounding ourselves in the truth of our own stories. It makes us feel less dependent on the approval of others and even more comfortable with their disapproval, if that's what we get." Unquote. Imagine if you walked into work tomorrow morning and your boss asked you to give a highly stressful presentation to the most important people in your company. And you've got no time to prepare either, so it'll have to be on the fly. Oh, and this presentation you're giving? It'll make you or break you in the eyes of upper management. Super stressful situation, isn't it? If you're like most people, a scenario like the one we just mentioned is more than enough to totally stress you out, which results in a spike of a stress hormone called cortisol surging through your body. As it turns out, researchers have actually simulated similar scenarios to the one we just described, and they figured out a fascinating coping mechanism to help us deal with these types of anxiety-inducing situations. Want to know what it is? The researchers uncovered that when folks are placed in stressful situations, their cortisol spikes dramatically. However, if they first think about a meaningful core value that's important to them and write down a description of why it's important to them, they can weather the storm of a stressful situation without the typical dramatic spikes in cortisol. This, my friend, is huge. It's called the power of self-affirmation theory. When we've identified our values and live true to them as often as possible, we truly become more present and more powerful. Here's an actionable insight to help you put this big idea into action. What are your core values? As Cuddy suggests, we can uncover them by asking ourselves the following question. What three words best describe me? Go ahead and take a few minutes or more to reflect upon that question, and then go ahead and write down your response. What three words describe me? Feel free to pause if you'd like. Next, ask yourself this. Which of the three words that I wrote down is most essential to who I am? Which one of the three words I wrote down is most essential to who I am? Now, write down why it's important to you, along with a specific example or time in your life in which you actually behaved in a way that embodies this particular value. Again, feel free to go ahead and hit pause if you'd like a few minutes to do this right now. Big idea number three, use priming to strengthen your personal power. Quote, recall a moment when you felt personally powerful, a time when you felt fully in control of your own psychological state, when you had the confidence to act based on your boldest, most sincere self with the sense that your actions would be effective. Maybe it was at work, at school, at home, or in some other part of your life. Take a few minutes right now to remember and reflect on that experience of your personal power, on how it felt. Feel free to hit pause. Come back after you've thought about it. All right. It felt good, didn't it? Whether you know it or not, you've just been primed. Thanks to that little exercise, your psychological state was, and likely still is, infused with feelings of confidence and strength. Cuddy then says, I could have just as easily asked you to remember a time when you felt powerless and stress-ridden. But of course, I don't want to bring you down. Had you done that, however, it too would have changed your psychological state, at least temporarily, for the worse. That unhappy sensation of being at someone's mercy would have come flooding back into the hidden recesses of your brain. Unquote. Much of what we do or do not do depends upon how we feel. If we feel powerful, we lean into life's big challenges. When we feel powerless, we lean away from life's big challenges. And when it comes to developing our presence, power is everything. Here's an interesting little tidbit for you. Research has shown that others can prime us to feel and then perform either more powerful or less powerful within a matter of seconds. How? By exposing us to an empowering or disempowering language pattern, or by having us recall an empowering or disempowering experience from our past. Much of this can be done through the use of emotionally charged language. Here's an example of an experiment to help put this idea into perspective. 10 people of the same exact socioeconomic standing volunteer for an experiment. They're split into two groups, Group A and Group B. Members of Group A are given the role of boss. Members of Group B are given the role of employee. Other experimental examples might involve exposing two different groups of people with quick flashes of empowering words. For example, successful, authority, versus disempowering words, obey, follow, and then observing the behaviors that follow with each exposure. Now, if you were to conduct an experiment like this, you'd observe a startling similarity between language and behavior, i.e., exposure to powerful language results in powerful behavior. So the bottom line is that in order to perform at your peak on a consistent basis, you've got to be primed for power. In just a moment, we'll discuss how you can do this, but first, it's important to point something out. Whether you know it or not, you're already priming yourself all day long. The problem for most people, though, is that they either A, don't know they're priming themselves in the first place, or B, aren't priming themselves for power as often as they can, and are instead consciously or subconsciously priming themselves or being primed by others for powerlessness. But here's the good news. Any one of us can become better at priming ourselves by creating and using little nudges, as Cuddy calls them, that trigger powerful feelings, which in turn help us become and behave more powerfully, both physically and psychologically. As Cuddy puts it in the book, quote, that's how it works. In each challenging situation, we nudge ourselves, we encourage ourselves to feel a little more courageous, to act a little bit more boldly, to step outside the walls of our own fear, anxiety, and powerlessness. To be a bit more present, and incrementally, over time, we end up where we want to be, even if we couldn't have said where that was when we started. Unquote. Here's an actionable insight to help you put this big idea into action. In order to prime a powerful mindset, it's important to remind yourself of all the times you've felt and performed in a powerful way in the past. Most people do the opposite of this. They prime themselves for powerlessness by reminding themselves of all the times they performed with powerlessness in the past. Now, in order to cultivate more power, it's important to remember to focus on your values and ensure that you recall and reflect upon your greatest moments of personal power from the past so that you can create more moments of personal power now and in the future. Big idea number 4. Be mindful of the way you carry yourself. Quote, "The way you carry yourself is a source of personal power, the kind of power that is the key to presence. It's the key that allows you to unlock yourself, your abilities, your creativity, your courage, and even your generosity. It doesn't give you skills or talents you don't have. It helps you to share the ones you do have. It doesn't make you smarter or better informed. It makes you more resilient and open. It doesn't change who you are. It allows you to be who you are." Unquote. Powerful stuff, don't you think? Now, the way we carry ourselves is a core component of personal power, which is, again, the key to presence. The first thing to become aware of here is the simple fact that the way you stand, sit, walk, talk, or gesture your hands plays a part in your ability to unlock your own unique and powerful sense of presence. Now, once we understand that the way we carry ourselves plays a humongo role, the next thing we need to learn is how to carry ourselves in a way that helps us expand our power, which is what we'll be discussing in the next big idea. Big idea number 5, expand your power by expanding your body. Quote, "As scientists, the first thing we needed was a clear hypothesis. This was our thinking. If nonverbal expressions of power are so hardwired that we instinctively throw our arms up in a V when we win a race, regardless of cultural background, gender, or whether we've seen anyone else do it. And if William James was right that our emotions are as much a result as they are a cause of our physical expressions, then what would happen if we adopt expansive postures even when we are feeling powerless? Since we naturally expand our bodies when we feel powerful, do we also naturally feel powerful when we expand our bodies?" Unquote. Answer to the question we just posed is yes. That's the answer. Since we naturally expand our bodies when we feel powerful, we do indeed also naturally feel powerful when we expand our bodies. This is one of the many profound insights Cuddy presents about how we can use our physiology, our bodies, to increase our power and presence. Now, there seems to be what researchers refer to as a bi-directional relationship between feeling and behavior. When you feel powerful, you expand your body. And when you expand your body, you feel powerful. One leads to the other. Bottom line, expanding your body language or carrying yourself in a more expansive way can actually make you feel more powerful. Now, this insight isn't just theory either. It's been tested and it's been proven. In one study, individuals were split into two groups. Group 1 assumed low power poses, which were exemplified in combination of sitting and standing positions. For the sitting positions, they took up less space when they sat down. They clasped their hands and then rested them closer to their bodies. For the standing positions, the first group stood with their legs closer together, arms closer to the body, and held their heads in a downward position. Now let's talk about group 2. Now group 2 assumed the high power poses, which were exemplified in the same combination of sitting and standing positions as the first group. For the sitting positions, group 2, which assumed the high power poses, expanded their bodies as they sat down, taking up more space and sitting in a relaxed, confident manner with their legs out and their hands clasped behind their heads. For the standing positions, they expanded into power poses, standing with their hands on their hips, chin tilted upwards, and their feet planted wide apart. Now, after just 2 minutes of posing in the aforementioned positions, the results of the participants in the sample study were as follows. The high power posers, the second group, showed a 19% increase in testosterone and a 25% decrease in cortisol, the stress hormone. The low power posers, the first group, showed the opposite pattern, a 10% decrease in testosterone and a 17% increase in the stress hormone cortisol. How could this be possible? How could a simple set of 2-minute body poses contribute to such a dramatically different set of biological responses? In scientific terms, this pattern is called dual hormone hypothesis. That is, high testosterone plus low cortisol equals high power, and low testosterone plus high cortisol equals low power. Again, when your testosterone's up and your stress hormone cortisol is low, you're in a high power position. When your testosterone is low and your stress hormone is up, then you're in a low power position. So, here is an actionable insight for you to put this big idea into action in your own life. Now, you want to experience the benefits of the high power posers? Of course. Here's what you do. Start doing some high power posing of your own. If you've got an important but difficult or nerve-wracking event coming up in life, try power posing. Refer to group 2's poses for some details on how to do those power poses, but try power posing for a couple of minutes for a quick boost in presence, power, and self-confidence if you've got a big but difficult or nerve-wracking event coming up. And remember, as Cuddy tells us, quote, taking control of your body language is not just about posing in a powerful way. It's also about the fact that we pose in a powerless way much more often than we think. And we need to change that. Big idea number 6. Small devices can lead to small presence. Quote, the smaller the device, the more we must contract our bodies to use it, and the more time we spend in these shrunken, inward postures, the more powerless we feel. Our findings uncover a cruel irony. While many of us spend hours every day working on small mobile devices, often with the goal of increasing our productivity and efficiency, interacting with these tiny objects, even for short periods of time, might reduce assertiveness, potentially undermining our productivity and efficiency. If you must spend long stretches in front of a screen, which many of us do, be sure to choose a device carefully and configure your space to allow for the most upright and expansive posture. Unquote. Go to your local coffee shop on a busy day, and you'll probably find 80% of people hunched over their tiny little smartphone screens. Regardless of whether they do it while they're sitting or standing, this hunching over screen habit is not contributing to their sense of presence. In fact, it's impairing their ability to expand, thus contributing to powerlessness. It's actually quite obvious when we think about it, too. Hunching down at a smartphone screen produces an inward stance, when what we're really looking for is an expansive stance. If you're looking to cultivate more presence, power, and a sense of genuine connectedness with other people, then stop hunching over and tapping away at your smartphone all day long and start being more present by putting away the smartphone, straightening out your posture, and expanding your stance a little more often. Here's an actionable insight for you. If you know you're going to be working in front of a small screen, take a few minutes to set up your workspace before you begin your work. For example, you might take a moment to make sure your computer chair is elevated just enough that you won't be looking downward for extended periods of time, straining your neck as you look downward at the screen, typing away. Now be mindful of not hunching over tiny screens for too long either. If possible, unplug and expand as often as you can. Big idea number 7, get excited. Quote, as most of us know, stage fright can feel like a paralyzing overdose of anxiety. And what do people tell us to do when we're anxious? They tell us, with good intentions, to calm down. As it turns out, that might just be the very worst thing they can say. You see, anxiety is what psychologists describe as a high arousal emotion. As I've explained, when we are anxious, we occupy a heightened state of psychological vigilance. We are hyper alert. Our hearts race, we break out into a sweat, our cortisol may spike. All of these reactions are controlled automatically by our nervous system, and it's virtually impossible for most people to shut off that kind of automatic arousal, to abruptly de-escalate it. Not only can we not calm it down, but when someone tells us to calm down, it also reminds us of how calm we are not, which stokes our anxiety even more. Unquote. Cuddy then, after saying this, cites the work of Harvard researcher Allison Wood Brooks and goes on to tell us about another high arousal emotion that's actually not so negative at all and is in fact quite positive. It's excitement. Quote, Brooks predicted that we may not be able to extinguish arousal, but we should be able to change the way we interpret it. So, rather than fruitlessly trying to change the arousal level of our emotional states from high to low, what if we try to change them from negative to positive, from anxiety to excitement? Unquote. So, the actionable insight from this big idea is pretty clear, isn't it? When you're stressed out of your mind, don't say, calm down, do say, I'm excited, rather than trying to change your arousal state from very high to very low, try changing the way in which you experience that arousal state from something negative to something positive. For example, when something stressful that you typically interpret as negative occurs, don't say, oh my God, something's wrong. Instead, try to change the way you interpret or experience that situation from negative to positive by saying something like, yes, I'm super pumped and excited about this right now because my body's giving me all of the energy and intensity I need from it in order to succeed in this moment. I've got this. So, next time you get nervous or stressed, just remember to feel the fear and use it as energy to get yourself excited and enthusiastic and ready to dominate the situation. As Cuddy advises, next time you're faced with one of these tense moments, imagine approaching it with confidence and excitement instead of doubt and dread. Imagine feeling energized and at ease while you're there, liberated from your fears about how others might be judging you, and imagine leaving it without regret, satisfied that you did your best regardless of the measurable outcome. No phantom to be chased, no spirit under the stairs. Big idea number 8. Fake it until you become it. Quote, in the first month after my TED Talk posted, I heard from an Olympic swimming coach who explained how he'd been using a power posing type strategy with great success for years, encouraging some of his swimmers, beginning on the morning of the race, to physically behave as if they'd won their events. Swimmers, as he pointed out, are notorious for their use of dominant body language in the moments before races, not only to signal their power to their competitors, but also to loosen their muscles and pump themselves up. Sometimes, they will literally pound their chests like gorillas. But the approach this coach used, encouraging swimmers to adopt alpha, nonverbal postures from the minute they wake up on race days, was most helpful to swimmers who'd been thrown off by a poor performance or who were feeling a wave of insecurity and self-doubt. Unquote. Arnold Schwarzenegger once had breakfast with one of his main competitors, Lou Ferrigno, prior to facing off for their big bodybuilding competition. Ferrigno's parents were also at the breakfast table. Eventually, of course, they got to talking about the competition. And when Arnold was asked about how he felt going into it, he said he'd already called his mom and told her he'd won. Now, this is an excellent example of what Cuddy tells us we need to do. We need to fake it until we become it. Now, this shouldn't be misunderstood as a free pass to manipulate others, but rather as a mental trick or hack of sorts that we can utilize in order to tap into our personal power and unleash the bravest, boldest, highest version of who we really are, who we're meant to become. Now let's close out this summary with one final actionable insight to help you bring this big idea into reality. Answer the following questions. Number one, what do you think about when you're performing at your best? Number two, how do you walk when you're performing at your best? Number three, how do you talk when you're performing at your best? In order to be powerfully present, we need to be able to reflexively recall meaningful moments from our past, the moments in which we were truly showing up as the best version of ourselves, the moments that made us feel bold and brave and authentic. In order to do this, it's important to write out how this bold version of ourselves thinks, walks, and talks, because doing so will activate your nervous system to bring those powerful feelings into the present. And after all, isn't that why you were interested in the big ideas from this book in the first place? Here's a closing quote to bring it home. Quote, if power reveals, then we can only know the truly powerful because they are bold enough to show who they are without subterfuge and without apology. They have the courage and the self-confidence to open themselves to the gaze of others. In that way, the path to personal power is also the path to presence. It is how we and others discover and set free who we truly are. End quote. Thank you for listening to this Flashbooks audio summary on Presence, Bringing Your Boldest Self to Your Biggest Challenges. Written and published by GetFlashNotes.com, narrated by Dean Bakari, original book authored by Amy Cuddy. For more great self-help book summaries, visit us at GetFlashNotes.com.